The iPod. The next step for the digital hub strategy was to make a portable music player. Jobs realized that Apple had the opportunity to design such a device in tandem with the iTunes software, allowing it to be simpler. Complex tasks could be handled on the computer, easy ones on the device. Thus was born the iPod, the device that would begin the transformation of Apple from being a computer maker into being the world's most valuable company. Jobs had a special passion for the project because he loved music. The music players that were already on the market, he told his colleagues, truly sucked. Phil Schiller, John Rubinstein, and the rest of the team agreed. As they were building iTunes, they spent time with the Rio and other players while merrily trashing them. "We would sit around and say, 'These things really stink,'" Schiller recalled. "They held about 16 songs, and you couldn't figure out how to use them." Jobs began pushing for a portable music player in the fall of 2000, but Rubinstein responded that the necessary components were not available yet. He asked Jobs to wait. After a few months, Rubinstein was able to score a suitable small LCD screen and rechargeable lithium polymer battery. The tougher challenge was finding a disk drive that was small enough but had ample memory to make a great music player. Then, in February 2001, he took one of his regular trips to Japan to visit Apple's suppliers. At the end of a routine meeting with Toshiba, the engineers mentioned a new product they had in the lab that would be ready by that June. It was a tiny 1.8-inch drive, the size of a silver dollar, that would hold 5 gigabytes of storage, about 1,000 songs, and they were not sure what to do with it. When the Toshiba engineers showed it to Rubinstein, he knew immediately what it could be used for. 1,000 songs in his pocket. Perfect. But he kept a poker face. Jobs was also in Japan, giving the keynote speech at the Tokyo Macworld Conference. They met that night at the Hotel Okura, where Jobs was staying. "I know how to do it now," Rubinstein told him. "All I need is a $10 million check." Jobs immediately authorized it. So Rubinstein started negotiating with Toshiba to have exclusive rights to every one of the discs it could make, and he began to look around for someone who could lead the development team. Tony Fadell was a brash entrepreneurial programmer with a cyberpunk look and an engaging smile who had started 3 companies while still at the University of Michigan. He had gone to work at the handheld device maker General Magic, where he met Apple refugees Andy Hertzfeld and Bill Atkinson, and then spent some awkward time at Philips Electronics, where he bucked the staid culture with his short bleached hair and rebellious style. He had come up with some ideas for creating a better digital music player, which he had shopped around unsuccessfully to Real Networks, Sony, and Philips. One day he was in Colorado, skiing with an uncle, and his cell phone rang while he was riding on the chairlift. It was Rubinstein, who told him that Apple was looking for someone who could work on a small electronic device. Fadell, not lacking in confidence, boasted that he was a wizard at making such devices. Rubinstein invited him to Cupertino. Fadell assumed that he was being hired to work on a personal digital assistant, some successor to the Newton. But when he met with Rubinstein, the topic quickly turned to iTunes, which had been out for 3 months. "We've been trying to hook up the existing MP3 players to iTunes, and they've been horrible, absolutely horrible," Rubinstein told him. "We think we should make our own version." Fadell was thrilled. "I was passionate about music. I was trying to do some of that at Real Networks, and I was pitching an MP3 player to Palm." He agreed to come aboard, at least as a consultant. After a few weeks, Rubinstein insisted that if he was to lead the team, he had to become a full-time Apple employee. But Fadell resisted. He liked his freedom, Rubenstein was furious at what he considered Fidel's whining. "This is one of those life decisions," he told Fidel. "You'll never regret it." He decided to force Fidel's hand. He gathered a roomful of the 20 or so people who had been assigned to the project. When Fidel walked in, Rubenstein told him, "Tony, we're not doing this project unless you sign on full-time. Are you in or out? You have to decide right now." Fidel looked Rubenstein in the eye, then turned to the audience and said, "Does this always happen at Apple, that people are put under duress to sign an offer?" He paused for a moment, said, "Yes," and grudgingly shook Rubenstein's hand. "It left some very unsettling feeling between John and me for many years," Fidel recalled. Rubenstein agreed. "I don't think he ever forgave me for that." Fidel and Rubenstein were fated to clash because they both thought that they had fathered the iPod. As Rubenstein saw it, he had been given the mission by Jobs months earlier, found the Toshiba disk drive, and figured out the screen, battery, and other key elements. He had then brought in Fidel to put it together. He and others who resented Fidel's visibility began to refer to him as Tony Baloney. But from Fidel's perspective, before he came to Apple, he had already come up with plans for a great MP3 player, and he had been shopping it around to other companies before he had agreed to come to Apple. The issue of who deserved the most credit for the iPod, or who should get the title Podfather, would be fought over the years in interviews, articles, web pages, and even Wikipedia entries. But for the next few months, they were too busy to bicker. Jobs wanted the iPod out by Christmas, and this meant having it ready to unveil in October. They looked around for other companies that were designing MP3 players that could serve as the foundation for Apple's work and settled on a small company named Portal Player. Fidel told the team there, "This is the project that's going to remold Apple, and 10 years from now, it's going to be a music business, not a computer business." He convinced them to sign an exclusive deal, and his group began to modify Portal Player's deficiencies, such as its complex interfaces, short battery life, and inability to make a playlist longer than 10 songs.